We are back. You have attuned to 104.3 and 104.7 KHOM, Conurica Arcata. My name is Lindsay, and I'm super excited to be joined via phone by Hoopa Valley Tribal Council Chairman Ryan Jackson. How are you doing, Ryan?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for responding. I feel like I was reaching out to you on very short notice, and you got back with me fairly immediately. I was trying to get in touch with you to see if there were any tribes locally that were participating in standing with the people at Standing Rock.
Yeah, absolutely. When obviously the issue has been ongoing now for actually a number of years, and actually the Sacred Stone was established, I believe, in April of this year, and it wasn't until recently that the chairman of the Standing Rock, Chairman Archambault, issued a call to action for all of the tribes and anyone else around the country. And at that time, they were seeking letters of support or tribal council resolutions or anything of that nature to assist them in the ongoing battle, if you will, with those folks trying to construct the Dakota Access Pipeline. So I decided it, I think, would be in our interest, as well as obviously Standing Rock and other tribes around the country, to write a letter in support of Standing Rock Sioux, and that's what we did.
That's awesome. And so I feel like many of our listeners are fairly familiar with what's going on. It feels like this has been going on for a long time, but most recently it's starting to garnish the attention of people nationally. And for those listeners who aren't familiar with the situation going on in Standing Rock, North Dakota, could you give your perspective of what exactly is happening there right now?
Sure. So there's obviously a lot of people know about the Keystone Pipeline and the battle around that, and the State Department having to issue the permits for, you know, that pipeline to be constructed. Now, secondary to that, there's the Dakota Access Pipeline that also is going to traverse a number of states across the country and down into the Gulf of Mexico. And where the issue arises is that one particular piece of the pipeline is set to be constructed in or on lands that were a part of ceded territory by the Standing Rock Sioux people, a treaty they've signed in the past. And the issue has come up is that the Standing Rock have identified sacred sites, grave sites, and other areas in and around where the construction is set to begin as having some real sensitivity to them. They feel like they've not, you know, feel like they have not been consulted by the federal government. President Obama issued a tribal consultation executive order soon after he entered office, and there's an obligation of the federal agencies to conduct a meaningful consultation with tribes in and around the country anytime these types of activities take place in or around our native lands. And that wasn't the case here. Now, on top of that, the intention is to send the pipeline underneath the Missouri River, which obviously is where the tribe and a number of tribes actually receive their drinking water, as well as a considerable amount of folks downstream. So there's plenty of fear around, you know, the potential for an oil spill, the potential for some really catastrophic things to happen. And the Standing Rock Sioux tribe are saying, look, we can't really afford to risk, you know, having this pipeline come through for a number of reasons. And on top of that, it's really causing a desecration of some of our most sacred cultural sites.
The government agency that approved this, the Army Corps of Engineers, is the one that is under scrutiny right now. Mm-hmm. By the Sioux tribe. And so it sounds like they just kind of, there wasn't much dialogue going on to approve this project. And being realistic, in the past, we really haven't, as human beings, been very responsible with the way we treat oil. And it feels like their concerns are very valid. They're proposing to run this pipeline under the river, like, what, a half mile upstream from where they're getting their water?
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
So what is the Hoopa Valley tribe doing in response? I know you mentioned that you sent a letter of support and a council resolution. Have you sent people actually to North Dakota?
Yeah, actually, a few days after I signed the letter, I actually made the journey myself with my folks I had there with me, and we went across the country and made our way there, met with a lot of people. Didn't get the chance actually to meet Chairman Archambault. We had some business in Bismarck around that time. But we were there. We sent supplies. We had a caravan of folks that were also with us and established Climate Trinity Basin base camp, if you will. It was a big sprawling area where there were a number of folks camped out and preparing to conduct or engage in the protest activities. Now, since that point, a lot of the activity has sort of waned as a result of the federal judge deciding that he wasn't going to take any action on the merits of the tribe's injunction prior to the September 9th hearing. So it seems as if, though, activity has picked back up again. Members of the Hoopa Valley tribe are now actually on their way. There's roughly 150 or so folks in a caravan of 15 vans that have supplies and other things that will assist Standing Rock in their struggle.
Wow, that's an amazing response from you guys locally to make your way out to North Dakota. What was it like? What was your experience like being there when you spent time there?
That was incredible. You know, you get to meet a lot of people who are really passionate about, you know, the protection of Mother Earth and understanding how sacred it actually is, really is, and also just the dedication to preserving, you know, Indian rights and rights that have never been given up. And folks were there, you know, supporting one another and keeping a positive attitude, a lot of prayer, a lot of, you know, people just coming together and talking, and it seemed like there was a real positive feeling to the entirety of the camp and the folks around there. And I think it seemed like maybe it was a calm before the storm, because as you know now there's been reports of you know, peaceful protests, being folks being pepper sprayed. There were dogs that were used to attack. There was a pregnant woman who had gotten bitten, a 4-year-old child was bitten in the face. You know, some other folks were bitten. So it seems like around the time that we were there, it seemed like there was a real sense of positive nature of the protest. But I think things are quickly escalating to a point of you know, it's becoming quite tense, and that's really unfortunate. So I'm not sure how, you know, the feeling of the camp now is probably likely that there's a little bit more stress, that I think there's some uncertainty as to how things are actually going to be moving forward.
You touched recently, or just a few moments ago, about September 9th and that being kind of a big date. Can you explain exactly what's going to happen on September 9th?
Well, I don't know in great detail the merits of or the language associated with the lawsuit that was filed by the Standing Rock tribe. What I do know is that there was an injunction that was filed in order to require that the construction company halt all activities until a federal judge determines whether or not they were going to move forward on. Actually, what the Standing Rock wants you to clarify is that the construction doesn't move forward until the merits of the case are actually heard and an issue or an order is issued by the judge in the entirety of the case. What the judge ruled in his initial order, which was in mid-August, and that was just several weeks ago, was that he wasn't going to take action on the injunction until the September 9th date, which I believe is the date in which he will actually issue an order on whether or not the merits of the case will actually be allowed to move forward. Now, if you read some of the reports that have come out, is that it seems as if though some of the permits have not been actually granted. Some of the issues as far as the consultation and the Army Corps of Engineers and some of the actions that have taken seems to be that it's likely that the judge, if you're looking at just the merits of the case, would rule in favor of the Standing Rock Sioux. But at this point, September 9th will be a day in which the judge will determine whether or not he will impose an injunction on the construction company, which will halt all activity until such time as the merits of the case can be heard and an order be issued.
So the volunteers that are heading out there right now, there's 150 members of the Hoopoe Valley tribe that are en route. How long do they plan on staying there?
Well, for now, they have a time frame of 10 days that they will be back there. Obviously, supplies and things aren't unlimited at this point, but they intend to be there for at least 10 days and will be there through the judge's order here in the next few days. And after that, we'll see what happens. Obviously, people have their own lives that they have to live on a daily basis, there's a real sacrifice by so many people from around the country who have come together to assist in what is looking to be quite a struggle here soon. And hopefully that won't be the case, but it seems as if though, folks are really prepared to do whatever they have to do to protect their rights and their way of life and the things that are important to them. But as far as the folks who are coming from California, venturing across the country, they intend to stay there for at least 10 days. And at that point, they will make a determination on if they're going to be staying any longer or if there's actually a need to stay any longer. I assume if the judge issues an order upholding the injunction and determining that no construction can actually be allowed until the merits of the Standing Rock case is heard and, a order is issued on that, I assume the camp will begin to wind down and they'll let the events unfold in the courtroom.
So at this point in time, that's kind of the goal, right, is to get the judge to hear the merits of the Sioux and halt the operation and ideally to stop this pipeline from happening, right? But September 9th will decide whether or not the judge makes that decision.
Yeah, the ultimate goal is to have the pipeline become non-existent and anything related to the construction or implementation of the plan just completely go away. But the immediate goal is to have a judge impose an injunction that would at least temporarily halt construction activities. Because like what happened, I believe it was yesterday, was a result of the construction company moving into the area where the tribe has identified their grave sites and some of the really sacred areas. The bulldozers came in and began plowing across the earth, and folks moved in and were trying to disrupt and stop the construction activity, and were met with pepper spray and dogs.
Yeah, I saw some footage of that, and it is really heartbreaking to think that. It's heartbreaking to see that, and the people who are there on the front lines are being tremendously brave and sure. And really standing together to do what they can to protect their land and their water. And I've heard this being described as kind of an environmental protest, but to me it feels a little different than an environmental protest. From a Native perspective, how would this be? Am I correct in thinking that way, or how do you guys think of this stand?
Certainly there are aspects of the protest that have some obvious impact on the environment. But for Indian people, the land is what we are tied to. It is sacred to us, it is Mother Earth, and there are things that need to be protected and not disturbed. And it gets down to really the sort of the tenets of tribal cultures and tribal religious activities and things that are really important to us. And it kind of goes beyond just sort of, well, you know, the environment may be at risk. This is actually our life, and this is who we are. You know, we've been here for thousands upon thousands of years, and we've endured a tremendous amount of activities that have tried to really destroy Indian people and Indian cultures, and yet we've persevered, and we've been able to maintain a semblance of life that as we've known it for many, many centuries and for a long time, for longer than that. And so this is really more about protecting everything that we believe in and everything that we know to be right. And we have a duty, we have a sacred duty to protect the land and everything that is sacred to us and that has been sacred to our ancestors that have come before us, as well as those future generations that are yet to come. So it's just how we've always been. That is how we always will be. And it is something that is really, we take great pride in actually standing up and are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice on behalf of ensuring that our rights and our culture and traditions are protected.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how many different tribes have gathered together at Standing Rock and to stand up for the preservation of the earth for future generations. And I've heard that it's being described as like a third Native American war. Does that seem like a sensationalistic way of describing it? Has there ever been a time like this where there have been so many different tribes coming together?
I don't think there's been anything like this where tribes have rallied together from across the country and from across the world, really. But I would say that there's always been, it seems like, a romanticized sort of idea of Indian people and warriors on the plain and, you know, all of these sort of things that have really grown sort of as a common thought of what Indian people are and what they, you know, we've always been. And it's unfortunate that that's the case, and you know, that's the picture that has been painted. And you know, folks talk about, you know, the final Indian war, and I believe there is some sensationalism in that. And what folks have said, and Indian leaders around the country, is number one, these are nonviolent protests. You know, these are protests that every American is afforded, and you know, it's no different than you know, anyone else marching for any other reason or any other issue that they believe in. Now, this has certainly stoked some real passion in Indian people from around all parts of the country, because it's this sort of common theme where the federal government or, you know, corporations and folks who are always after natural resources, different things, just sort of take for granted or feel like they can just topple over or trample, you know, people's rights simply because they are more powerful, or there's this perception that you know, the folks that are on the ground don't really matter as much. But as far as a third and final war, there are a number of Indian wars across you know, number of years through the 1800s. There's actually 1400s up through 1560, 1800s, 1900s up until now. But these battles, you know, these battles over water rights and treaty rights and the issue of land, all those different things. You have, shoot, the Hoopa Valley tribe here, as you well know, the Yurok and the Kuruk and everyone else, you know, we're battling year after year to preserve the salmon that come up the Klamath River into the Trinity River, and the constant diversions of countless acres of water that goes down into the Central Valleys to feed, you know, that monster. And yet, you know, it's still that there's a lack of real recognition by the federal government, who ultimately, through the signing of the treaties, is responsible for managing resources in a way that allows for Indian people to maintain a way of life that we've always had. And unfortunately, that's not always been the case. And what's happening is Standing Rock is another example of that. You look at Cherry Point up in Washington, the Lummi tribe, and the battles that they've had with the Army Corps engineers, and again, the Hope Valley tribe, and the release of the water in order to ensure the survival of the salmon. I mean, you go all around the country, look at the Navajo and the EPA releasing all of that water into their river, into their water stream. I mean, you know, it's this is not something that is uncommon. It just seems like it's really sort of galvanized Native people across the country because, you know, at a certain point, enough is enough. And when a tribal leader like Chairman Archambault says, hey, we need help. You know, we're out here, we're outnumbered, we're calling on all of our brothers and sisters around the world. And it's not just Indian people, but it's just anyone in particular who's willing to come over here and help us in this effort. You know, that's our responsibility to the earth and anything else related to that is to respond and say, hey, you know, you do have our support. And we've done the same. Like I said, the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and the termination of tribal rights that was a part of the language in that agreement as well. We issued a call for support. We got 56 tribes across the country to sign letters on in support of and on behalf of the Hoop Valley tribe, sent to their congressmen and their senators, and you know, tribes in the 21 tribes in Arizona signed a letter. I mean, it's, you know, something that we all believe in, and like I said, we'll ultimately make whatever sacrifice is necessary to ensure the preservation of the way our life.
Thank you again for joining me on the phone. And if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Hoopa Valley Tribal Council Chairman Ryan Jackson. He's talking about the situation going on right now in Standing Rock, North Dakota. There are many, many people gathered there to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline from continuing the construction of that continuing. And September 9th is a big date coming up to see if the people are going to get their chance to voice their opinions on why they feel like this project is bad. Not only is it taking place on sacred land, but it is also potentially threatening the water resources for the tribe that is just about a half a mile downstream. And so there are 150 people on their way from the Hoopa Valley tribe right now to North Dakota. For the people here in our community, Chairman Jackson, what can we do, Indigenous and non-Indigenous people? What can we do to help in the efforts to stop this thing from happening, this access pipeline?
Certainly, number one is becoming aware and educated around the issue would be the first thing to do. That way, you know, the better understanding you have of the entirety of it, the more likely you'll be able to assist in whatever way possible. I mean, if that's writing letters to your congressman, if that's making phone calls, if that's donating to the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, or if that's, you know, taking and sending supplies or actually making the trip across the country to stand in solidarity and support of the efforts there on the ground. Any one of those things is equally as important. You know, prayers and thoughts and sending, you know, positive messages is also you know, a helpful thing that anyone can do and doesn't cost you much at all. But I would just say, taking an opportunity, going online and researching the issue and seeing, you know, exactly what the potential impacts are of this pipeline and other pipelines, you know, that are set to be constructed. And it's not as if though that these pipelines aren't already, you know, all over the country. It's just that the potential impacts of like pipeline and its failures are what is really at concern. And at a certain point, it's, you know, we need to really move away from these fossil fuels and go to more energy sustainability. But that's what I would say would be some of the things that folks can do in and around our area and across the country.
Okay, is there anything in particular that you feel like is more productive in taking action? You've got volunteers, they're bringing supplies there. Or is there any one thing that you feel like you could do that was the most powerful thing? What would you say it would be?
And to be honest, it would be to go across the country and stand there with everyone else who's engaged in this effort. They have again issued a call to action for people all around the world, frankly, to come in and stand with them and really push back the construction and all the activities that are happening. I mean, if people are able to actually do that, I think that would have the biggest impact in the shortest amount of time.
Well, thank you so much again for taking time out of your day. I know you've been really busy, and I appreciate you getting back with me when I was initially reached out to you. Please keep us updated when the tribal members make their way back to Humboldt, or if there's anything going on over there. I would love to talk with you and see how that trip went, and we'll be keeping all of the members of that community in our thoughts and hoping the best come September 9th and for the future moving forward with this project.
Yeah, absolutely. I always appreciate the opportunity, and thank you very much.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Okay.